I'm Tiffany Charles. I've come once before, but Chief Growth Officer for Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned, and a partner of the firm. So I've been in the industry for 14 years, and I am we're a second generation firm at Destiny Capital. So that means my business partner's father, Jared, his dad, Steve, owned the business starting in the 80s, and it was a lifestyle practice. Steve did an incredible job positioning himself and growing the firm to a really great place. But everything in the firm was meant to how do we serve Steve so that he can serve the clients? And so there wasn't much more to that model. And it was like, if we feel capacity, we hire and we create a position. And that position, even if it's similar to another position, doesn't necessarily have the same measurements of success or have to follow a similar process or anything along those lines. It was just like Steve could adapt to who he was working with. They could adapt to work with him. And as long as he could do what he did best, then he was happy, and would do maybe a discretionary or profit share at some point, on top of salary. So that was kind of our makeup. And it worked really well for Steve. But when he had the choice, he could sell to a third party, and or sell internally to Jared. And a part of that was his legacy and really thinking through if I'm going to do an internal sale, like I want to see the expansion of service and serving more families and being really excited about where you can take this firm next. And so Jared officially bought majority ownership in 2017. He brought me in 2018 as a partner as well. And so I also bought in. We can have conversations about why we feel it's really important to buy in as a partner. And he brought me in to grow it. Like, I love growth. I was sitting in a business development seat. I have worked a lot of strategies. I had some pretty big success in particular with like center of influence strategies, and had a really great understanding of like how do we build. I would say my superpowers were like people and prospect, and I would say even more now it's like prospect and process, that then leads into that overall client experience. People management is a little bit different. But we come in and I'm like, okay, so I'm here to grow it. That's my title. I need to do it. And I start going to market. I interview our second generation advisors in there. So all of the associate advisors that were serving Steve, I'm like, who are you passionate about serving? So we had women dealing with the loss of a spouse. We had retirees. We had business owners. And I was like, great, we're going to create a mastermind for you. And we're going to focus here on client referrals over here. And the business owners, we're going to enter the entrepreneurial market and start building webinars. And we're going to do these things. And we started getting a little bit of traction, but we didn't have a standard client service model to serve these three different. Like, we just had, if you have money and planning needs, we'll meet you where you're at. It was not like, how are we going to show you how we're onboarding? Or a woman dealing with the loss of a spouse is very different than like a couple that's about to retire at 55, and just all of those components. We didn't have a fee minimum. And so it was like, did we just take on a $2,500 client? Like, we're not profitable at that. Like, we have centralized investments. We have, you know, at least 35 to 40% going to back office operations because we're heavily backed office. And then we have these advisors. And so Jared and I were like, okay, growth magnifies where you'll break. And we are going to have to slow down to speed up. And so
It's on.
while.
I was
Go
actually
ahead.
thinking about that earlier, Tiffany. I put a note in the lifestyle call. It's kind of like becoming rich and famous. Like, right, you've toiled away for 10 years, and now you're suddenly a big star. And you've got your Tom Hanks, who everyone says is lovely, and then you've got the people who aren't. And it really growth compounds more of what you already have. Right. So if you're right and tight and things are running smooth, right, growth can be a really nice runway. And if there's a bunch of litter and clutter all over the runway, it's going to be a lot of blocking and tackling and dodging and weaving and false starts. And it's very, very frustrating, right? You've all felt some version of like, oh, why is it so hard to get this thing off the ground and running the way that I want? And when Tiffany and Jared, when Jared bought the practice and brought Tiffany in, and Tiffany, like, they really had a very successful practice by industry standards from revenue and AUM. It looked amazing on the outside. And it was a, and I say this with all love, like, it was messy because everything in the firm was built around what the founder felt like doing on any given day. Who do we want to talk to? What do we want to do? This is a great idea. Let's try that. And again, it doesn't mean it's not a good business, but if you think about your firms, the shift is fundamentally, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is the hardest work that you will do. Michael's going to talk about it in May. The shift that happens, happens first within you. Every time. You have to be willing to look around, take an honest inventory and say, what's working? What's not working? What feels good? What doesn't? And then systematically make the shift. So when Tiffany and Jared, they started at the beginning. Hey, we've got great AUM and revenue, but the downstream of that is not in each of those nine areas, not at all what we want it to be. We have to build a system for delivering value. And so instead of building, right, a self-track for the founder to deliver value, and that's essentially what Leaders is about. So you're going to hear this whole conversation, conversations that we have all the time, and that's the before and after. What I always like to highlight is Tiffany will tell you, the grass is greener on the other side. It really is. She will also tell you that it still has to be mowed. So she's going to talk about like this whole thing. People come to me all the time and they say, I want to grow. You're here because you want to grow. But the problem is, and this is the real work that we do as leaders, is we have to get really clear on what we're growing and why. So we're going to talk about advisor capacity. Remember, there are four growth inhibitors. Do you guys remember what they are? This is not just me. This is the research, right? Lead gen and closing rate. That makes perfect sense, right? Referrals, because no one pays attention to them and there's a whole bunch of money just sitting there waiting for you to stop being too distracted. And the fourth one is advisor capacity. And the problem is, the reason that we're the only business that I know of, we have all the advantages no one else has. You get a client and they stick around for 20 years unless you blow it. I get a client, might stick around for a few. But if I do my job, you move on. No one comes to you like, oh, I don't need you anymore. You've done your job. Right? It doesn't mean we don't have legacy and all of that, but you have this incredible asset, which is why we can be successful. And I say this with all love, when we're kind of complacent and when we do things in a mediocre way, because we don't have to go find new, we have to find compounding growth clients. We don't have to replace those clients every year. So why could we possibly be in a business without higher margins? And the reason is we've got a lot upside down in this business. We have demographics upside down, right? We have a lot of older people with a lot of experience and like all the stuff. But the fundamental issue here is that if you don't flip that switch, if you don't shift that conversation in yourself from how do I build a business that is not about me? How do I make the client the center of the equation and then systematically go through everything to make sure that I have time to work on the business and not just in the business? Because here's what essentially happens. You get an advisor starting with you and you get to about 60% of capacity if you're average. 40% is wasted on email and distractions and manage all the stuff we talk about here. That's average. We're not talking about the stuff. So if you take 40%, right, dilution, and then you hire another one of those engines and then you hire another engine, what have you done? And now we've added the complexity of managing, are you ready for this, underperforming engines. And that's assuming that they're all awesome humans and perfect. Let's be honest, not going to happen. So now we're multiplying the problem engines and we have to manage that on top of it. And most firms don't put that structure in place and have career paths and all this stuff. So what happens is things become more complex as you grow and it erodes your margins. If you solve for these things along the way, you will be one of an elite handful of firms that is happy and really high performing. So with that, Tiff, go ahead and continue. But I just really, it's going to magnify more of what you've got, which is why we're not like just doubling down on growth in year one, because in 12 months, you won't like me anymore. Right. I'd be like, oh, that's great. Thank you. But I have no life and things are breaking all the time. What Tiffany and Jared did, which is what you're going to do in leaders, is break things on purpose. You're going to intentionally break things at the moment of need and impact. So Tiff talked about knowing your customers. That next step is, how do you engage them, right? So this is where, what are you doing? How are you doing it? So Tiff, do you just want to talk about how you then kind of took the customer journey and started to lay it through the firm?
Yeah, so then those next steps were like, okay, slow down to speed up. Operational leverage is going to be really important. And we're going to have to take a deep dive into all the core areas. So like, number one, should we as a firm be letting our advisors drive who our niche clients are? Maybe we should look into who we're already serving and who as a firm we want to make those decisions around and build the team to that mission and vision, right? And number two, like, if you haven't done it, the client profitability calculator that Steph has, and looking through, like, we want to run a certain profit margin. We want operations to be a certain component, and we want the other percentage to be built into those that are servicing our clients. If we can run that, what number is that? How many clients are currently falling below that? How many are above? And what are the tiers of service associated with the different levels of revenue? Like, how are we defining those? Didn't really have that. We were serving all clients very similarly before. We had about 8 different tiers for fees. Like, it was like a really complicated piece of math to get them to tell like what a client's fee was. And like just to give you guys a basis of where we were in 2018, we were still doing fees on Excel spreadsheets. Yes, there was technology available that made that really great and less human error. But we were not there as a firm because everything was just working the way the founder needed it to. And it was great. So, and things like, I was brought in to centralize growth as a firm. I believe in the centralized model. Also had expectations that our advisors grow because that's the expectations of the industry. And so like, how do we have the servicing advisors, but we also want business development from them? Why are we, you know, how do we hold them to those standards? We're onboarding new clients. They have a salary and they're like, that's just more work for me. I can have 50 households and get the same salary. Like, so there's a lot of things that growth just shined its pretty light on. And so
that's a nice way to put it.
And so we had to start getting into structure. Number one, looking at ourselves. So you've gone through the components of why, what are we looking to accomplish? What are our missions? And then two, like, we took account for where we were at from technology, people, process. And we really started to look at the firm in different components. We had like our vice and client fulfillment or experience. We had our operations, and then we had our growth. And then how are we going to tackle each one of those and divide that up? So we start getting the operational leverage components in place. Client service model is where we started. So on the Destiny Capital side, if you guys know a history on our where we're at now is we have Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned. Entrepreneur Aligned is just a DBA of Destiny Capital for marketing purposes because we're targeting two very different client base. There are companies that do it very well under one hood. I was struggling there because of the way we were set up. So we decided to do it in a two-hooded way. There's pros and cons. Cons are duplicating, like you have to do two types of content and do two different things. It also gives us the options right now that we like as a firm. Like if we ever want to break off one and move another and or create different paths, like we can. I'm not suggesting that you go off and do it because I think there's examples of both ways, but that's just how we are set up and we've made the decision. There was stuff like a year and a half ago where I'm like, do we fold it back under? Do we let one go? It's kind of messy to have different marketing components to it, but we've figured it out.
It very much goes to what we talk about with service models, right? Which is if you have multiple service models, right? It's the service model strategy that will save you because you can really systematize and standardize and automate that and right, get really specialized efficiently. And that's essentially what you will also do on the marketing side for those of you, right? So this is a really good example. As we talk about, there's no right or wrong. It's really understanding the impacts and implications of the choices that you're making. because they split the companies out, the marketing is more effective. And when you look at the two companies, and Tiffany is going to show you in particular Entrepreneur Aligned and Branded CEO, like you'll see exactly why they did that, because you cannot fold the very, I was so happy this morning when I saw like all the before and after and the data on the other side of it. Like we could not have done that inside Destiny with the very specific branded CX that we created. Now you could have, I was thinking about this earlier, Tiffany, you could have a personal retirement operating system.
Yes,
but you most can. Retirees aren't quite as like, when I say EOS, you guys all immediately know what I'm talking about. You think vision, planning, goal, structure. Retirees don't necessarily all think that. Anyway, I digress.
Right.
The point is really it's about how you're engaging that, in this case, right, the brand and the messaging, but you'll duplicate it. You can use the same principles, right? Stack the content, follow. So once you're good at it, doing it twice isn't that much more work. It's always front end. Build the brand, build the funnel, build the landing page. Once it's done, it is more to manage. But again, there are benefits there. But their branding is very distinct. So if you're right, retirement for everybody, you're not going to necessarily just go split it off into business owners and everybody else. So Tiff will tell you a little bit more about that, but I really want to call that piece out for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know, like going back, I'm like, gosh, right at the moment, it felt like the only choice because I was having such friction trying to tell the stories of two different niches. But like now I definitely give space to there's more options because we definitely went through a journey in adapting to the decisions that we've made, which is true always. But we looked at our current client book and it turned out that what Steve, our founder, had built, like all of his clients grew with him. So as he was about to retire, like they're all in like retiree mode. And so I was like, oh, like we have a very retirement heavy practice in Destiny Capital. Hey team, how do we feel about being the go-to retirement team in Colorado? And we focus everything there and we get like very clear on what we're doing, right? Hitting the retirement income, the tax and the investment components. And we ended up branding it the Remarkable Retirement. And we stick there and the team's like, yes, right? Because that's ultimately like what we're doing. So we went to get clear on like, what are the qualifications associated with that. Jared and I were very passionate about our business owner and entrepreneur clients and really felt there was a huge underserved market and that a majority of the focus is just in exit planning. And we were like, why aren't we serving them way before then? At that time too, we were like, we're either going to find out why nobody has picked this up as a niche all along the way. And we might have a real big ego on like, we're going to solve this, component and we're just going to find a little bit of a differentiation to open that spout. And I had already been in the community for about 12 years and working with different entrepreneurs. And what we found was that conflict of interest was around the ways in which we charged asset under management fee for business owners. And that they felt their only education was around us being market investment people. Like they don't have an understanding of what financial planning is. So bad news is buyer journey, like non-aware, aware information gathering, buying. We're in a component of non-aware. So having to really educate, right? Retirees, like there's a lot of life that's going to shift and they're going from one paycheck to another, like highly motivated and not uncommon. So much, much different brands to start to learn, but we get this and we build the client service model internally. So Jared and I look and we're like, okay, we need tiers of clients based off the profitability and where we're at. So we have our iron, which we consider we're not adding anyone to. Some of them were moved off the books over the years. And it's still a decent amount of revenue as long as we can stick to in profitability. Honestly, it's a pretty profitable. If we can do one advisor and adhere to a client service model of the touches that we have. And then our bronze, that is, if they're gold or platinum client family member, we don't hold to the same minimums. So we will allow so our bronze are important client family relationships, but we have a service model for that because you can quickly get into over servicing and they're not meeting where we would hit profitability margins.
So remember that those multiple tiers we talked about, you can have a revenue tier, a service tier, and a relationship tier. So you can put someone in a relationship tier platinum, but put them in service model, bronze. And then the relationship tier allows you to give them the attention they need relative to the outcome you want in an intentional, appropriate way. We're not doing more meetings in the hope of getting referrals. We're doing things that will get us more referrals in the hopes of getting more referrals in using that example. So when you get there and you get to like building out the segments, keep that in mind and let me know or Natalie know when you want to have those conversations, because it's using that that allows you to solve for those. Well, how do people solve for that? Well, what about that? There are easy ways to solve for that.
Yeah. Tiffany, I think it would be helpful because we talk about these sort of these three distinct tiers, but really understanding how you differentiate, particularly when you're working with like that second generation, like the tendency is to over service, more meetings, more planning, you know, the inability to say no. So I'm sure the group would benefit. Like, how do you create some of those distinctions, like where are you serving them more and where are you actually drawing the boundaries and getting really comfortable saying like, that's not the service model you're in?
Yeah. Great question. So we've really worked with our teams on this. So we even have like our silver, which is our minimum fee up to about $5,000 more in revenue. We have our gold and then we have our platinum, which is above $25,000 a year in revenue. So we have those broken out. And then we have built a chart with the team on what is included from a relationship management component and then a planning component, because the investment management piece is centralized and it doesn't take a lot of the team time. So we're looking at like from estate planning, who are we like, you know, collaborating with the attorney and sitting in those meetings, like we're doing that with our platinum, like from a bronze perspective, like we might review their estate plans every 3 to 5 years and then have a conversation with them about and make an introduction to an attorney. But we're not holding their hand through that entire process, right? Like that's a key differentiator on time, because when you're sitting in on those meetings and working with the attorneys and holding the hand through that process and keeping engagement to get that done, that can be a lot. Now, eventually, right, we're always reviewing technology, like there's Snug or like, I don't know, other technologies out there that review estate plans for you, like a whole list of plan, like those can be components where we can continue to maybe add services to the different tiers and then think about how we're spending our time with the clients. So we're always looking at how are we deepening the value based on technology available as well. But that's a component. Our bronze and silver, we don't do in-person meetings with them. They're only virtual. We'll only do in-person with a certain tier and above. I mean, nowadays, most people like Zoom. Than what they did, but that when we were building this and we continued to refine it, that wasn't the case. It was still like 60% wanted in person. But we can easily see time creep come in person versus Zooms. And so we do just because calls, so quarterly touches to clients. And we do 2 of those with silver and we do 4 with our gold and platinum. So you can see that there's like different relationship components and stuff associated with that. On top of this, Natalie, from a advisor creep and how they're managing their time, we put what we worked with the advisors and asked them based on prep and all of the service areas, how much time they thought they were spending in each component. So we did that with our lead strategist, our associate, our investment group, and our client operations group. So then what we know is, and we ran this against the calculators and profitability, right? But our platinums on average are getting 44 hours a year of our time, our collective time as a team. Our gold are getting about 32 hours of our collective time as a team. So when those things come up where our team is feeling capacity, but they're only managing so many households, and we're looking at it from, we have a calculator internally to look at that, we're having a very different conversation. on like, okay, meeting time, prep, and like, where is it breaking? Because we're showing that you should have a capacity of still, you know, 30 to 40% of your time or 25% of your time. So let's examine why you're feeling a capacity crunch. The important piece there was we had their buy-in on the hours that we were using ahead of time. We first directed this and they were like, your time's off. Like they love to think that CEOs and business owners often think that things can be done a lot faster than they are. So once we had their buy-in, it became a really great go back and go back tool. And we could look at like, wow, you sat in on that silver meeting for 3 hours. Like, tell us about that. We also learned that onboarding new clients for our team was typically double the hours of ongoing. And so how do we build that into the client service model, knowing that they all as teams need to continue to grow? So how many households could each team take each year? How do we forecast capacity? So then we can also forecast hiring. So the really important takeaway here is we got aligned, we got disciplined, and now everything is about predictability in this so that we can maintain our engagement and value creation for our clients and ourselves as a firm.
And we always like to say you can't manage what you can't measure, but I'm not even talking about the data here, just saying, hey, what's the service model cycle? Oh, and again, right, if you're in year one and we're not, right, again, just capacity and bandwidth in terms of changes, but right, model meetings and surges and just because call will be such a huge shift for you before you get to level two, right? Level three, think, right, standardized service models and ultimately the specialized super whoopy automated stuff. Because what we're doing year one is really focused on taking everything you're doing and uncompounding the dilution and complexity and getting what you're doing running as effectively as possible so that you have time, space, and capital and clarity to then, right, continue to build. And some of these places, like you might be ready to go all the way to, right, PhD level, right, top of the mountain and service models, and that's okay. It means you won't be spending time on something else. So you will get to all of it eventually. You're just deciding how you're going to implement it. What you're going to hear Tiffany talk about, or continue to hear her talk about, is that this all did not happen in 30 days. It was getting ready to get ready, take the next step, and then the next step reveal. So when I think about, like, even for me, you know, you think of this grand big plan, I mean, you know, your brain wants to, and really I got to the point where I was like, what's my next best step? Like, I know what the outcome I want to create is, and what's my next best step? So there's systematically going through things. A couple things, because I think that was a great takeaway. A couple of things I want to call out. One, and I put some notes in the chat. Two, if you listen with your mind ear, not your audible ear, what you'll hear her saying is assessment, clarity, transparency, accountability, assessment, clarity, transparency. Like when I talk about the mental model that we're helping you build, that's what you're hearing. Hey, we have a problem and it doesn't feel good. We should probably stop and figure out what the heck is going on here. And now we're going to spend the next 6 to 9 months, you know, solving this messy problem. And that's, I think, a really important part. Tiffany will tell you, this wasn't like, oh, this guy parted and everything was like, boom, we had a meeting. And it was like, there were a lot of messy moments. There were phone calls. Stephanie, I think, oh, what's going on here? Ah, like you'll hear about those. But that's the messy moment that's our work, is to really persevere through those moments. I also put a note in the chat. If you listen to Tiffany's marketing piece, the before and after here, I'm going to ask you to go through that just a little bit. And when you do the personal wealth operating system, the before and after, what was your conversion rate was it last year when we talked?
Yeah, and
tip. I get the high and the low calls.
You do. I'm sorry. No, they're never like just consistent. But yeah, so we got the operational leverage and then moved back into growth. In Q2 of last year, our conversion rate dropped to 40%. And I was like, well, that's it. I suck. And I'm out. Like, I just can't do this. I don't know what's happening. Like, this is my title. Like, it's my worth, you know, all of those things crept up. So yeah, to Stephanie, I went to just have a conversation of like, okay, you got it. Like, you're laying the tracks. And it was just, there was just like, it was easy to see it. I take moments to reflect on what's going right and what's going wrong in meetings. And we were able to see, I'm like, okay, they're not getting to a yes because it's overwhelming, like all of the things that we do. EA, like it's so frustrating. It's like, it's the first time they're ever learning about this. So it's like they're digesting and now we're getting into a place, but I'm not getting movement. And even in Destiny Capital, the retirement components, I was like, how, like, these are supposed to, like, this is supposed to be the 6 foot, you know, dunk, like what, you know, like just like, this is supposed to be easy. I've never had these issues. What's going on? And then that's when we went to like that. We just needed to message it a tad bit different. And not only that, but I was very much in a proving state versus a listening and showing state. And we made that shift. And we have had 100% conversion on all qualified clients since June of last year. Now that's, I know that that's not sustainable. We're going to get our nose at some point, but our goal is 75% conversion. But we've also decreased our time in prospect process by at least 5 hours. And some of those decision making have dropped from EA. It was getting close to 3 to 4 months. We're in about a 4 to 6 week window with most of our entrepreneurs now. And most of our Destiny Capital clients are yes within about a week or two of having two meetings. The average time, yeah, prep and follow up and presentation has dropped significantly. So we've figured it out with just some tweaking of messaging, help of stuff, and Limitless to get us to where we need it to be.
The really cool thing is if you take the 44 hours across the team for an average client and you divide that by $20,000, which is their minimum fee, I divided it by 25 just for fun, and it was $568 an hour. That's an effective hourly rate. I'm going to get close to the microphone for emphasis. That is an effectively hourly rate across the team. That means, right, the person making $70 an hour is included in that average. That's their effective rate. That's all hours. That's incredibly productive. Most advisors aren't operating themselves at $568 an hour. Now, here's the cool thing. If 25% of those hours are advisor facing, remember how I said you can get to $2,000 to $3,000 or $4,000 an hour and your brain is like, oh, what awful human have I become if Stephanie hits me there? No, if 10 of those hours are advisor facing, and I'd argue it might even be 7 or 8, but let's just go with 10 of them. That makes the effective hourly rate on average $2,500 an hour for you, Ron, or Chris, or Tiff in this case, or Jared. That's incredible. Now here's the really cool thing. They're not the ones in all the meetings. So Tiff will talk about like some of the team changes. So their average advisor making really good money, but not making what Tiff and Jared make, are generating $2,000 to $3,000 an hour for some of those clients, right? Smaller clients, it's less, which is why they get pushed downstream. But I really want to call that out because when you build a new marketing system, right, that growth engine that we talk about, we think, oh, this guy's going to part, oh, and a bunch of clients are going to show up. Sometimes that happens. Usually it's not that sexy. Usually it's drip. We try, we didn't quite work, we didn't get the clip right. And then once you lay all the tracks, meaning you put the pieces in place, you pick the niche, you build the website, right? Or you update it, you do your marketing. Then you go back and you do exactly what Tiffany did. You runner it, right? Remember, rip off and deploy, refine until no new edits are required, right? So we sat down with Will now, who does an amazing job last year. And the thing that I just so love, because you just sit there, right? And like stuff just pops in and right, this concept of personal wealth operating system, which is their version of the branded CX, and Tiffany will show it to you and we'll talk about it later in the year, right? But we think of the positioning, they hit 4 out of the 5 positioning pillars. Yeah, they should have incredible rates, right? And then Tiffany went through every part of it, the funnel, the data, the prospect meeting, the time, and ultimately got not 90, you know, not spreadsheets, but like basic data that will tell them how they're doing. And that's the managing performance piece, which is that 4-step. In those 6 that we talked about, and one of the things we talk about here. So if your conversion rate isn't what you want, right, 70% or better in our book, then it's a place to pay attention. To Tiffany's point, it might not be what you stop and do right after this call, but tracking the data. We hired Lisa, who's our new director of marketing. We are so excited to have her here. And I handed her a bunch of data and I said, I haven't really looked at this a lot. I haven't had time, like we're growing. I don't have a director. I said, but I got the data. We look at it, right? We're doing, but I was like, you got a lot of data. And she pot, we had a meeting last week and she was like, did you know that 21% of it? I was like, nope, didn't know. That's amazing data. So even if you're not going to use it yet, data, any data that you can get, right? Just track new prospects. Edge is right down. How many hours? Like Bob and Jane, how many hours did I spend? If you do that 3 or 4 times, you have to do it for a year. You're going to get a basic idea of how much time you spend with a prospect. And then you can ask yourself, right? Is that the amount of time that I want to? So there's just a lot of really cool takeaways in there. What is your team's effective hourly rate, right? If you took your, even one of your larger clients, if it was 40 hours, like here's what I know about Tiffany's firm now. All 44 of those hours are radically on purpose. There's no lazy, busy. I'm not saying that there's not all, you know, we're all humans. There's a, you know, 10% of that just because we're human. But those hours were all designed in advance. They sat down, they had the meeting, they built out the service model, they tweaked it, they should change career paths, right? They had to align comp to get it to actually, hey, we want to do this, but the advisors aren't entirely on, like the client as the North Star really does ripple through every part of the firm. And that's the process that you guys are going through. Growth is messy, but on the other side, it's really beautiful. And then you still have to water the grass.
Yeah. And then once you have it, like it was, you know, for leaders, as you have teams, so we have 3, almost 4 distinct advisory teams servicing our clients. So different clients as a part of the model. We have 2 on the DC side, 1 on the EA side, and I think 1 that's going to play a hybrid role for a while that we're moving into. But it was like, okay, are you all looking at Roth conversions in a similar way? What's our philosophy on that? Are you building it and doing it this way with a client and you're building it and doing it this way with the client? So the next step was, we know where we're going to do certain pieces for each client. How do we now consistently deliver that as a firm? And that started with Jared, my partner, directing that to the team and building what we call in our client service playbook, like our philosophies on each component. We've now shifted that because we're really learning on how does things report up to us versus us reporting everything down. We have a financial planning group that is our client service teams that meets every other week and for the quarter based off of either what's directed by us as a firm and or where they're having the most friction. We're solving our philosophy and then creating the process and workflow associated with that planning component. So we keep building on that every year to ensure that it's consistent across our platinum clients being served by different advisors, by our gold clients, different advisors, and how that's going to be utilized. So that's been a really great way. And to Steph's point, like I didn't collect the data, or Jared and I didn't collect the data, like determining what our unit economics were. And then we went a little too crazy and we were like, it was like a lot of data. I personally don't think you can have too much, but then it was just kind of an information overload. And this year we're like, simplifying a little bit on like, what are our moving and shaking data components, but like it really did help because it showed us a lot of how we were spending our own time. And it just, it helps us say no and yes to the right things, I guess. So data is really, really important.
Well, it's hard to make informed choices when we have no data, and experience is data to an extent, right? But the more data we can put in the set, the higher the probability that that data will tell us the story that represents the reality that we're trying to solve for. Yeah. Kevin, you had a question, I think, around ratios on the business side around, just that's data yeah. too. Go ahead, you want to ask that question now?
Yeah, and then another one that came up. So you've mentioned earlier, you want to have certain percentages for like the profit and the operational and the advisors that are assigned to it. Can you touch on roughly what those percentage the targets are? And then to follow up to what you were just saying there, what do those teams look like that are, what makes up a team? What components do you have as far as what roles within each team?
Sure. So our profit margin, like what we're looking for right now, and as we scale, there'll be some more leverage and opportunity in that, but we look to have a profit margin of 30%. So we're looking to benchmark against like other and like in enterprise ensemble practices. And then 40% up in the client service and advice side of things, and then 30% in the back office and operation components. And then we also are looking at like revenue by employee and revenue by advisor. Those are also good benchmarks into where should you be working to hire? And then our components. So we have a lead advisor, like we call them our strategist. And then we have an associate advisor. We call them our coordinator. So they're servicing a book of business together. And then we have centralized investments. So we have our chief investment officer. So he's actually doing all the training, managing all of the investments for the firm, educating our team and doing all the training there. And we also have centralized operations. So they're doing all of the accounts, any sort of money movement, all the paperwork and everything associated there. So our team, our advisors are meant to be in a seat of relationship and advice. Right. And
strategy. Don't forget the financial planning piece was the big piece that you moved over, that we moved over last. And that I think is a big game changer from a scale perspective.
Yeah. Because when you start looking at the hours, right, like our client operations, like they can handle like 250 or 260 households based on the hours that they have, where our advisors are much lower than that in the book. So when you start pulling out those pieces, it allows them to serve a little bit more and stay in all of the seats that we're looking for. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So that last piece, okay. Now you have like a separate financial planning team.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to build into that more. So like we're a team of 13. So we don't have like, if like our departments sometimes are one person, mm-hmm. And, or a person splitting a role, because that's where we're at as a firm, knowing that it creates career pathing and optionality, but we can see the benefits to our scale as well as our profitability, as well as like for the team to have centralization of some of that to ensure consistency and then pushing and then delivering the way that we want to.
Well, yeah. And here's the upside of that. You haven't hit on it yet, but it's such a powerful statistic. What percentage of your advisor time is spent on client servicing?
Yeah, we just adjusted it again because we've centralized growth under me. So business development and marketing is also centralized. They have to onboard new clients, but 80 to 85% of their time is in service to our clients.
Now, keep in mind that the average advisor is losing on average 40% of their time to complexity and dilution and lack of certainty and all the stuff that we talk about. They've just literally like 2x'd that productivity. Not with any one solution. It wasn't service models or teams or the clients. It was each of those things creates that alignment we talk about, right? The guardrails are tight, so all your energy can only bounce around, right? When it's wide open, your energy goes everywhere, and we ultimately know what that feels like. So think about, like, most of you aren't at 80 or 85%, right? So first, Tiffany and Jared had to leverage themselves, which was a whole round of work. Right. We had managers who were bringing them problems, and I love them both to death, but I was like, why are you solving the problems for your managers? They're supposed to do this and you're supposed to be growing the firm. Right. So there was a huge shift there. There were shifts across the team. To Kevin's question, the cool thing about the director of planning, which we've done a lot, I'm friends with Angie Herbers. I like the Diamond Team model. It's great. $300 or $400 million firm and you've never done any of that. It's a really cool model. It can be a cool model to implement. My experience is it's can be harder to grow into because you've got your service person, your junior advisor, your advisor, and then your senior advisor. And in a lot of your firms, each of those roles, to Tiffany's point, isn't going to grow at the same pace. So if you've got somebody who's ready to manage a team, but the junior advisor isn't ready to back them up and take a team, your growth model's on pause. So because, right, if you're at a billion or more, like, then we can absolutely have that conversation. And that was the direction that Tiffany and Jared were going. And this is why these conversations with us and with each other, right, we'll have a lot of them in May. You're going to have a lot of challenge conversations in May. So I hope you're ready. Because then the conversation, we get to ask those better questions and we get to have better answers, which is, hey, are these numbers okay with us? Are they really working? And when you ask those questions, you get to a point. So with the director of planning, here's why I like it. Again, it depends on your situation. We'll talk more about this as we get to teams, but it's a scale conversation. If you're not growing rapidly, don't worry too much about it. If your goal is to grow and create a lot more continuity, the cool thing about the director role is, A, it's centralized. That does not mean advisors don't know advice. They still have to get their CE, right? But this person is now the technical repository, and they can get that knowledge and disperse it across the team instead of 5 advisors going to 5 conferences. And by the way, they all come back and no one else gets the other information. One person's calculating, to Tiffany's point, the retirement this way. Someone else is using this and doing it that way. And so when we create that clarity, we get a lot more productivity.
Would you be okay if I shared something, Steph, that really kind of helped Jared and I put our mind around it? Guys, I have a lot of stuff that is not pretty designed. That's our next up level. But this is where we got to, like, how do we start consistently delivering and thinking about our firm? And so kind of the three core areas of advice, client fulfillment, operations, and growth. And there's specialties under each one of those. So we're hitting on all of these all the time as a firm owner, and it can be really overwhelming. So on the advice and client fulfillment, we have the advisory side, the planning, the investment, and our client operations team. Like, what is their focus? What are the roles? And then what are the, like, two to three key responsibilities that we are measuring for success in each one of those components? We did that in operations, right? Security, system security and data, like technology, we have compliance and legal, finance, fees and benefits, like your HR component, and then your talent, culture and performance, like engagement of the team, accountability there. Like, what do we need? Who is it? And you'll see, like, some of that is outsourced underneath. Some of it is two people or one person sitting in two of these seats. And then growth. We have the, how are we bringing it in? How are we onboarding it? How are we creating our brand recognition? And then client experience, that can tie to advice and fulfillment, but really looking at client experience through the lens of, like, advocacy and engagement over there. So like events, overseeing client communications and mass communications, and just researching and co-creating, as you see, the co-creation of client experience with the advisory team. But once we got this down, it really started helping us look at each one of those pieces. So I didn't know if it helps, but as you were talking about it, Steph, I was like, this structure just kind of helped us really think about our team and the power of centralization, as well as, like, and then it's like, how do you cross function and how do you cross train and all of those components?
Well, and it really is, it's a leverage conversation. And so what you're seeing in both the conversion rate, the team service capacity, right, the profitability, is you're seeing that they're systematically saying, what's the standard and how do we create leverage around it? What's the standard and how do we create leverage around it? And the director of planning, which is not a commonly centralized role, but we're seeing that certainly with the firms we work with and in larger firms, because it's that same benefit, which is, if an advisor is spending 30% of their time doing non trusted advisor type stuff, right? Plan input or fault, right? Things that a director can do, we've immediately increased capacity. Two, we've got continuity, right? Because things are, right, institutionalized within the firm. We've got consistency across advisors because someone's designing away. Jared's now hyper leveraged because he doesn't actually have to be the technical wizard behind the curtaining, a really competent person, and he's really smart. So he's going to stay on top of it, but that doesn't have to be his primary possibility. Now he doesn't have to spend time disseminating it, managing it, right? Like, there's someone who can do that. Here's the really sexy part. When your director gets busy, because you're going to start with one, you don't go hire another $200,000 director. You go hire an $80,000 pair planner or an admin. It's super leverageable, because when you replace advisors, you're replacing the highest comp you have. When you scale the director, you never hire another director. You always hire less compensated people. So there's a lot more scale in the model. If that person leaves, you still have a bunch of advisors. You don't have one team that's sitting there handicapped. You can disseminate those advisors across the team for a little bit. Everyone can still work, can still do planning, right? We've got a team there to do it. Like, the redundancy at a human capital perspective is a lot better. The scale is better. And then what you hear Tiffany saying, if you're, again, listening, right, with your business ear, is you hear her saying they're doing a lot more leading and managing and a lot less reacting and cleanup. Yeah. And that's what these strategies and structures give you, is you get to set the track, set a standard, build to it, and then manage it, which is a lot different than spaghetti and cleanup, as we like to call it.
Yeah. I think an important piece of this, Tiffany, is, you know, as you're sort of starting from solo and then you grow to one advisor or two advisors, what you don't realize is, if you're a one-person firm, you still have all the teams and departments in your business that an enterprise does. You still have marketing, you still have ops, you still have HR, you have all of those things. Mm-hmm. And by mapping it out and identifying, you know, where roles are hybridized when you're small, you can start to see where you start to peel off. Like, okay, now it's time to bring in this role. And you're really honest with yourself about all of the roles that you're taking on. And as you hire, it then gives you the ability to say, okay, how do I hire for the future growth of the business? Not how do I hire to support me?
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Do you guys have other questions for Tiff? Otherwise, I'm going to have her give you a quick view of their personal wealth operating system. Go ahead.
I have one more.
Yeah, go for it.
If I haven't reached my limit yet.
Nope, good.
Can you give us a quick overview of what Jared spends most of his time on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Jared has grown, we're happy to say he's grown to a seat as a CEO of the firm. So the client service teams have a meeting and they'll report to him, although we are working on having even all of them managed to the next person. We have someone identified internally for that management. They report to him client service model changes, where they're identifying opportunities as a firm. So he's really sitting in a mentor seat right now and management, but more mentor as we move management to the client servicing teams. He's no longer sitting in client meetings, with the exception of our EA, our entrepreneur aligned clients for onboarding, number one, because he loves it. And number two, because he's very good at it. And so we still have a place where we need to probably mentor and train and grow an advisor to serve that client base from the ways in which Jared can. So his time is any new entrepreneur aligned client, not Destiny Capital. We have the team and talent for that. He is in mentorship of the client servicing teams, but he's no longer directing a lot of it. It's speeding up. Number three, he's moving into a lot more thought leadership for the firm. So that's where we needed to get him. So starting next quarter, we need him to be out, like talking about us with me in coordination with me, so that we have a big component of what he's able to bring and how he's able to present our personal wealth operating system and entrepreneur aligned. So that's what we're working towards. Other than that, he gets good time to think about how we're competitive in the market. So he really should be in that, like that, how do we remain competitive? So we've had opportunities from like M&A perspective, both to be acquired as well as to acquire or merge in. We're debating, right, tax and legal components, and if we're bringing that in-house or if we have certain relationships there. So he's the one that really leads the charge on, like, how does that work from an overall business perspective. It took a lot of years, and I would say that Jared is to get to a true CEO position for Jared, and I would say we're about 60% of the way there. We'd probably be closer to 100, but we have had a lot of beautiful new families and babies born, and we're a team of 13. So we have some shifting and adapting so that we can help our team take their 12 weeks.
She's not joking. Wasn't it like two maternity and one paternity? We got to four. Yeah.
Oh no, we're on four mat leaves this year as a team of 13. Yeah. And we give 12 weeks full pay. So there has been a little bit of, like, he would probably be closer to the 80% CEO chair if we weren't doing some coverage for client service.
But the thing that strikes me as I hear you talk about that, because I just put a note, like, when you are really fully leveraged, well, I know I keep saying we're going to talk about this in May, I'm so excited. You'll do like five or fewer things. Like, if you think about like category buckets, I do speaking, strategy, and solutions. Now we just hired a director of marketing, right? So that come off, content rise, we're hiring people, right? But at the end of the day, that falls under solutions. As a lifestyle advisor, it's just on a scale of 0 to 10, how far you can go up the leverage scale stops at things like advice, because you're the only person delivering it. But things like service models, you can get pretty high because the tech can do everything except deliver the advice for you. So as you get bigger, Natalie brought up a really good point. Imagine that you've got every hat on your head and you're just taking off one hat at a time. Here's, you start with service and operations, right? Then you, right, add, you bring in a service advisor typically, right? Then you do advise. Then usually what's next at the scale levels, you bring in professional management or marketing, whichever one of those you didn't do next, you'll do next. Like there's like, right, those seven stages of growth that we talk about. The thing that's so incredible is this started, I think you guys were with me like in 2018 when we started, and then you joined Limitless in 2019. I think you guys were in lifestyle for 2 years and then helped with leaders for 2 years, 4 or 5 years. I mean, they have gone from taking over a firm that was a wonderful mess, I said with love, to, you know, 100, and again, it's not going to stay 100%, but that tells you how, like, how tight that process is right now. One, getting people into the process. It would not be 100% if the wrong people were making it through the process. So that tells Tiffany that her legion is really tight right now. And right, then it's right, 100% someone will say no, we'll figure out. It's, I would say, the weak spot in the system. It's right, it's just going to be one of the reasons that people don't use them. And they'll be able to account for that or not, and it'll be what it'll be. Those kinds of changes, when they started, right, Tiffany and Jared were coming and it's like, the team isn't doing this. And then I was like, well, why are we solving the problems for them? Now the team is coming to them and saying, we're right, we've got capacity. Let's do some growth stuff. What do you got for us? How many of you would love to have that team sitting in the car coming to you and going, hey, we got bandwidth. What are we going to do with it? Let's grow. And then you felt good about their ability to actually sit in the seat and help you do that. And so in 3-4 years, you can radically transform your practice. And what Tiffany will tell you, when you get through that hockey stick part, because that's the messy middle where you call up and you go, I made changes and my closing rate just dropped. And Tiff, I don't know if you remember in the very, very beginning when we shifted Karen to the blue collar business owner's niche. Mm-hmm. And I was like, pipeline's going to dry up. You're going to panic. You're going to call me. I'm going to remind you of this conversation and I promise it's going to be okay. And like it exactly happened that way. And then Tiffany's associate was at the lifestyle event like 6 months later. And he's like, we have 40 qualified referrals. We don't know what to do with them all.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to get through the messy middle part. So it's the clarity and the vision. And then it's showing up, doing the work, and then right, leading into it, and then managing on the other side. If you lead in, but you don't manage out, you'll do some cool stuff, but it will still be wonky on the back end.
And if I can share, Kevin, I would love to also like share what my role is, because I think a lot of practice owners also sometimes really like the role that I'm in and not necessarily the role that Jared in, or to sit in the combination, because you don't necessarily need two people there. We just are really believing in centralized growth. And like, as you can see right now, CGO is doing all the components. Like my next hire is a BDO underneath me that I have a very cool comp model based on, because our industry is cool and what you can pay somebody for acquisition of client, given how long we hold them and the revenues that we charge, but that'll become a repeatable place. But I sit in a seat of, I open people's minds to what we do. I get them to say yes to us as a firm. So I do the prospect process and then I hand them off to the teams. I am not in ongoing client service. Like I just love sitting in that role, getting them to say yes. And then I love to move them into a team who is just as passionate about like consistently serving them over and over and over in that client service model. So that's also a role that I think we're hearing more about and getting excited. Like my whole lens is like, we're a marketing firm that does wealth management. How do I build those predictable lines of growth and make this super enduring and get out the kinks and then create even more career pathing internally for this? And honestly, as an industry, we're kind of, in my opinion, super behind because professional services have business development teams. And we've always had such a hybrid model of like the rainmaker, because I think the way in which the 80s and the 90s worked to build the practice, but now servicing advisors are very different than rainmaking people. And so there is this component of like, you can sit in a seat where you're getting to do the fun upfront value hits and then give them to a very, very good team and they feel really well taken care of. So just another way to think of a CEO position as well.
Yeah, most of you, at least for a bit, when you get to right 300 or so million, remember, right? 300,000, 700,000, 1.2, 3.3, right? Up the growth curve, right? When you get to that point, you'll be in a place between here and there to have professional management. At that point, usually, right, you can get to a place where you can have professional marketing management. And it doesn't mean you don't do the parts that you love. Some people don't love any of it. It's a really good option there. I started out as a marketing, right, director of marketing and operations in my 20s. I didn't know a lot about marketing or operations, but it worked out. The point is you can really put someone in that seat to create growth leverage. It doesn't mean that you're removing yourself from the process, right? So if you're great at finding business and going out, you're still going to do those things if you want to and you love them. It's just that your growth officer is going to leverage the heck out of that, get you more of the right opportunities and pick it up and run with the right finding, binding, minding, and grinding. They're like, great, you find, we'll bind, mine, and grind the heck out of it. And we'll do some finding too. You might not want anything to do with the finding and you might be like, hey, I just want to sit in my chair and have you bring amazing clients to me. Okay. So again, you don't have to start with a CGO. You can start with a part-time virtual marketing assistant and say, hey, just, I want to invest $5,000 this year in just getting my data together. I'm going to hire somebody at $50 an hour, give them access to the system. It'd be like, here's 100 hours. Go figure this stuff out. Go get all my marketing data, put it in Limitless. This is really cool spreadsheet. And I'll know what I'm doing. Like, we get so hung up in our head of having to build the big solution. I'll have my great, like, think, I want you to always, when we share examples, be thinking about the incremental application. What's my version of a CGO right now? Mark, it might be, hey, I'm going to bring somebody in on a part-time basis to help lay those tracks faster because I want to. Right. And then if that converts into a role, great. If it doesn't, right, you've spent 3 or 6 months on a contractor, you've set an amount of money and you've accomplished a really big goal. It might be, you know, get all my SEO data organized. It might be track my prospect process data. Like, there's, we can talk about that in calls. There's a lot that you can do incrementally to start to create leverage before you get to the point that you're hiring a full-time growth officer. But when you get there, it's really fun. Tiff, do you want to take a couple minutes to show them just the brand update and like where we went from everybody, literally went from everybody as a client, and it's all about the founder, to a just a shining example of all of the concepts that we teach you at Limitless?
Yeah. So I'm going to focus in on our entrepreneur aligned brand, because I think that's where we're super excited about as a firm, and we're really getting into a critical mass that's creating a ton of opportunities for referrals, which we knew we had to get to. And Destiny Capital is in a great place too. It's like remarkable retirement. We are the go-to for anybody who's retiring in Colorado, and we're working on our local SEO and all of the components associated there. So it's really great once you define it, because it helps you just hit your content and what you say yes to and what you say no to, from a marketing dollars perspective, because I'm sure you all feel it, but we've put a lot of marketing dollars into areas that you feel like, well, that didn't work. And it's, you know, once you get your client clear. But for entrepreneur aligned, who on here is familiar with EOS or the entrepreneurial operating system? Okay. So this is a structure that many entrepreneurs know. And I was like, I've been out in the market talking to hundreds for years. And I was like, this is like, they understand it. And it's such a common language. And even if they don't use it, they have some sort of concept associated, or like they have some sort of understanding. So Steph and I were in this meeting about rebranding with EA. And like, we needed a hook, like nothing, it just wasn't landing. Like I think we had this like, you know, let us save your time, or let's make your success yours, or something like that. And it just was like, what does that even mean? And so I was like, everybody knows EOS, like everyone understands the importance of having an integrator and how that's going to scale their business. Like all of a sudden they're getting, you know, they have their L10 meetings and their VTO meetings, and they get the big rocks and they get what they have to do, or they get where their failure points exist. And like, it's just coming together. So we created the Personal Wealth Operating System, and this has been a real game changer in people understanding what we do from a comprehensive financial planning component. Like, that was where I was having friction. It was like, you do all of that? And I would go through like a 2-hour meeting, which I don't even go through now. And then at the very end, they'd be like, okay, but what's the return on the investments that you guys are going to have managed for us? And I was like, how the heck did you just put us in the investment bucket? Like, did we just not talk about the fact that your like company is structured wrong and we have the ability to like possibly save millions of dollars by a different entity structure? And then, you know, like, and that like you have a huge failure point. Like if you don't show up to work every day, like your family is damned. Or how about that $100,000 of surprise tax you just paid? Like, aren't you mad about that? But then it would come back to like, but investment, because they know our industry as AUM investment advisors, right? So we remove the friction with a flat fee retainer. That's how we work. Their assets can be managed in-house or not. We have a couple, they usually roll them over at some point because it doesn't make sense to pay some other person who's just managing ETFs, you know, 1% somewhere else, but they don't have to start that way. And so that's been helpful too. We got into this personal wealth operating system and I was like, listen, we go through an operating system as well. You get to remain in the seat of your visionary self and your wealth, right? You're the visionary of your wealth. We're going to be the team that's behind you integrating this. We're going to help you ensure that your business is working for you, that you are not becoming victim to what you're building. And we're going to do that by 5 pillars: get clear, grow wealth, minimize risk, optimize equity, and we're going to maximize life. Entrepreneurs spend a lot of money in maximize life with coaching and all of these things that they want in their life. And the get clear, grow wealth, and minimize risk is true to our retirement practice as well, right? So the optimized equity is really a differentiator in what we're doing and how we can build for our entrepreneurs. But, you know, the get clear, like they get excited about, like they love to vision and they start to understand the importance of the values. And we talk through those components. The grow wealth, I'm always like, this is the sexy pillar that every entrepreneur wants to talk about. It's profit, it's growth, it's wealth creation intentionally. We get through that. What I've learned to talk to them about, I was like, core things that have come up consistently as important is like, you know, your business is at the core of your wealth plan. And most, you know, what we see is most other entrepreneurs, you know, really see their market investments as treasury management and liquidity needs. Like they're not utilizing that for performance in their wealth creation. That's what they're investing in their business. And we typically see real estate as a secondary asset class that they really feel excited about. Is that true with you? And they're like, yes, of course. Or that's something we definitely want to invest in. And so we talk about how we show up in their financial world in those components. Cash flow is always another one. We know that most entrepreneurs have lumpy cash flow and it's inevitable that they have something coming up in a short period of time where their cash flow is shifting. And we talk about what's our cash flow process. Minimize risk. I'm always like, no failure points, right? Like, how do we look at that? How are you feeling? I do the tax compliance and tax planning conversation. All of them have tax compliance. All of them are pretty sure they're overpaying taxes or they could be optimizing in a way. And when you talk about the difference between compliance and planning, they're like immediate gap in planning. And it's always like an important point. Nobody wants to pay more in taxes than they are. And so those are like some of those pieces. And I say, this can be a lot when you look at it. And I was like, but it's not an event. It's a journey. Stephanie, very common language from Limitless. And I'm like, what we're here to do is we have a process and structure to help bring this together and that we meet quarterly. And we are talking about what are our rocks, what's important, and how do we get to each piece. And once these components are in a really good place, and you have a team that's constantly integrating, we spend a lot of time on maximized life, because the other components are just in consistent refinement and growth to get to the point of how are you utilizing your time, your energy, your relationships, and health. And it's just a story that has totally resonated. The final component there is I bring that together, and then they now have this where I put our team is a gap for them. They're managing that. So, and then those pillars of the process that they get, and then we coordinate and we really specifically here put everybody in their individual lens, right? Like you have a CPA and that's great, but they're usually looking at it on a 1-year basis just from a tax compliance component. And, you know, oftentimes the CPA will make decisions and they don't have full picture. Like, here's how we optimize that experience for you. You know, your legal is looking at it from these components and they're always here. Like, this is how we optimize that experience for you. But right now you're sitting in the seat of trying to put it together. We help a lot of families know the right questions, the right space, and get a lot more of their dollars with their other professionals as well. And so it just has really translated into a great, great story. And the common language, when they know how EOS has drastically shifted and gave process and structure to their business, and they've gotten such efficiency and outcome out of it, it easily places us in their world as somebody that can be really important.
Does that make sense? I think the thing that's so valuable about that is it solves for what I think is the most ambiguous problem in our profession today, which is quantifying the value of planning. And I think we could all agree, I've known Tiffany for years. She's an incredible marketer. She's got the talent, she's got the kismet, she's got the creativity, like she's got all the right, all of it. But she had a 40% closing rate.
Yeah,
right. The processes affirmed it. It went down. Like they did all this amazing stuff, and then it cratered. And the reason is because you do really ultimately have to lay those tracks. Right? You're launching, you talked about this earlier, you've got to launch at 70%. And then, right, the 30%, if you launch at 100%, you're still launching at 70%. There's still something you're going to, right, learn, read, understand through that process. So the thing that I think is really important here is packaging actually matters. When we talk about one of those five pillars being a unique branded CX, this is research-based. It's because when you do that, it quantifies for the brain what they're buying. And then it gives them a yardstick to measure. Like, oh, they're going to help me with this and this and this. I love all of those things. And it's funny because, Steph, I remember being in that conference room and you guys were going through everything. And I was, what if we just did like this operating system, right? And I swear to you, I was like, I don't think Jared's as excited about it as I am. And so when you think about that, like the thing that really makes that work, Tiffany, is it's relatable, right? When we say operating system as a business owner, particularly like EOS, like your brain, I was like, everybody already knows what it means. They don't have to think about it, right? So if you think about like with retirees, that might not work as well if they're little ladies, because they're probably not in the business land. But if they're executives, you could do like a chief retirement officer, because relatably they totally get, oh, this person that sits and directs and right, like Mark, right? Like it's the brand anchor that you're coming back to. Then what you'll notice is they lead with the outcomes. There's five of them in their case, right? It's, by the way, three of them are the same for most of you, right? Planning, investments, get clear. The optimize equity could be optimize retirement, optimize your tech stock, optimize, right? Being single on your own. Like, and then the maximize life piece, that's just a cultural stylistic choice that they make. I was thinking about your question, Tiffany, around the circle. You just do one big circle around the whole thing and it says maximize life. And then you put the brand, the proposition in there, and it looks really nice. So, right. It's a relatable concept, something people, there's no translation. They kind of get it. If they don't get it, Tiffany made this point earlier, they've got something similar. Right? They have their version of launch, or they meet with their team, but it's like, hey, you have a process for getting clear, defining goals, managing them, dealing with under and over. Yeah, we have that. Okay, we've got one too. And their brain instantly goes, oh, I know exactly what that means. Then she shows up, here are the five key outcomes. They did, similar to what we do, an assessment. So Jared's built out an assessment. Oh, Tiffany, I got to tell you, we've crushed the assessment thing if you want better visuals. So like they have their clients take the assessment, the same way we do with the diagnostic, and they give you a score. Here's the really cool part. Then when they get that data over time, they can give you a score relative to your peers. When we do masterminds for entrepreneurs, which I swear we are going to do someday, Tiffany, and we give everybody that diagnostic as part of the mastermind, massive legion. But now what do we have? We have a massive amount of data. So like every time that Tiffany and Jared are out marketing, they should have some standalone version of that assessment, even a light version, Tiffany, that they give people that will 4X their legion. So when we started doing that, right, when we give you an active assessment, when you scan the barcode and it's like, hey, I can get a copy of that tool, you 1X click the barcode and give me your email. When we put the assessment up there, I get something not just relatable, but personal. It went up 4x in our Legion. So I don't know if you guys are doing that, Tiff, but that would be the next step is I'd create, we did the standalone version and it's all Legion. So now clients know what they're getting. And now we don't have a 3 to 4 month process. We have a 4 to 6 week process because we didn't spend a month and a half trying to figure out what the hell Tiffany was telling us. That's the power of packaging. Tiffany's incredibly intelligent, creative, and articulate. And she was doing the show up, throw up, prove it method. I'm going to tell you about all the value. And then she just went, well, here's like 5 entrees. Like, do you want these? And they go, their brain goes, yes, 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 yes. Thank you. There's no selling in that model if the client is aligned, which is why I think they've got such a high close rate. They did so much work on clarifying the client on the front end, built a client, a process completely around that North Star, and then built out their entire growth engine over a few years in line with everything that we teach you, literally those best practices. And now we're seeing conversion go up huge. Advisor capacity is at 80 or 85%. That's astronomical. Profit margins are where they need to be. And their growth rate, like EA was an investment, right? I like to call those expensive experiments. Mm-hmm. And first couple of years, they were not entirely sure that it was great. Where's the R? And now like the growth curve kicks in and that's where you get to have a lot of fun. So Tiff, I mean, honestly, congratulations, because
thank you.
That's what Leaders is all about, is that before and after. And I really hope you guys took a lot out of that. Any 2 or 3 things you could just play with and implement again, incrementally. But our goal in the big picture over the next couple of years, ladies and gentlemen, is to have you sitting here telling the story of how you went through your client base and how you aligned your client model and you aligned your brand and your marketing and you built your growth engine and you aligned your team and look at the mojo and the magic that happens on the other side of that. It's still work, Tiff and I, right? Like we still chat. I'm like, today was not an easy one. She's like, I don't know. I was like, I know. Like we still do. But you've gotten over the hump of every day is a messy middle day. Now we've got to attack something. Where are we? And when you know the process, Adam talks about this all the time. Like it's so overwhelming in year one. How am I create all this change? In year 2, 3, you're like, oh, time for a plan. All right, we got a project. All right, team. Like Tiffany and Jared don't go, oh God, how are we going to get this done now? Like it's clear, it's focused, it's empowered. And that's what I love. The shift was from a really good practice, but disempowered around how to lead and manage it into the future, into a place they have fundamentally accomplished the big goal, which is leverage. They've put themselves in seats that are hyper leveraged so the business can scale and grow without the founder, Jared, or any partner. Like if Tiffany left, they could replace the growth officer. If Jared left, if something happened, it would be but he's replaceable. Like genuinely, and that's good for the clients, it's good for the team, and it's good for the business. And the good news is, as the founder, you don't have to fire yourself. You can do it as long as you want, but all the benefits that we want are on the other side of making that shift from practice to business. So I think we're coming up on time. If you guys have any other questions for Tiff, let us know. I thought you were gonna be able to make, they were gonna hopefully be able to make it to May, but they can't, so you'll see them again this year. Hopefully in September, because we're going to do some fun stuff there. If you guys have questions, let us know. Tiff's going to share some examples. So we'll get those, the service model and things that I know you guys would love to look at so you can see how she's capturing that. I told Tiffany not to worry. We'll make it pretty for her. Happy to do that. Tiffany, thank you so much for taking the time to share your success story and the highs and the lows and the befores and afters, because I hope you guys, it's really helpful to you to listen, right, how it ripples through the firm and the benefits on the other side. So Tiffany, thank you so, so much. It's such a beautiful growth story. And I know that you and Jared really invested all that you are mentally, physically, emotionally in it. And the rewards are there. And I know they're going to keep, you guys are just going to take off from here. So congrats. Love you guys so much. And thank you for sharing. All right, you guys, give Tiffany a big whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. Okay. All right. You guys, we sent out check-in notes. If you have not replied to that email from me, please do. If you have not scheduled a personal coaching pass call, that will be our focus. We're now hitting April, where we're in May. So we want to make sure if there's issues you want to dig into, service models, teams, marketing, whatever it is. We're obviously working on most of you on service, right? The client base right now, but you want to talk to Natalie. I think Chris and Laura, we talked about having you chat with Natalie to start building out service models. So as you guys get into those strategies, please don't forget that we're here. you have those calls, and we're happy to spend time with you on them. All right, ladies and gentlemen, go make it a gloriously awesome week. Have a good one. Thank you, Tiffany. You rocked that.